Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is hilarious.
Shut your mouth, dude. Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Going down business with Aaron Cliver.
Yeah. Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Cliver. Guys, good episode today with my friend John Dick Winters, Pittsburgh comedian, also founder of the Burning Bridges Comedy Festival. You'll hear a little bit about that. And yeah, we had a good talk. Good times. Very funny guy, really helping bring the Pittsburgh comedy scene along. Also tours all over the country with Race to the Coffin Comedy Tour. You hear a little bit about that, but he also has twin daughters, and that's a lot of good times. I can't imagine. But hey, real quick, fun announcement. One of my partners, goodsandevil.com, you guys now have a coupon code. It's my favorite movie and nerd shirts, Goods and Evil. Goodsandevil.com. You can save 10% on any t-shirt. Just put in the code GROWNUP, all one word, GROWNUP. Yeah, I know, GROWNUP. On goodsandevil.com, get 10% off any shirt. Thanks to Dan at Goods and Evil. My favorite shirts, Camp Crystal Lake, my Boomstick shirt, my Big Lebowski Abide shirt that glows in the dark. Dope. My Brain Bite shirt that's a brain with a zombie bite out of it. That's also one of my favorite shirts of all time. And they also have a line of vegan shirts, too, if you're into that. But check that out. Also, if you want to see me live, part of the Burning Bridges Comedy Festival, guys, midnight, Saturday, April 16th at Arcade Comedy Theater, I will be hosting my Comic Wars stand-up comedy game show. There's amazing comedians from out of town that are part of the Burning Bridges Festival. Norlex Belma returns to Pittsburgh from New York. Shannon Norman is on that too. Arcade Comedy Theater, midnight. Also, and if you haven't checked out any other shows for the Burning Bridges Comedy Festival, that is Friday and Saturday, burningbridgesfestival.com. I'm pretty sure that's what the website is. But no, it's burningbridgesfestival.com. There's a lot of awesome shows. And I think you may be a little late on getting a festival pass for only $20. That's unbelievable because there's a lot of shows. So, I mean, like a lot. there's shows all over the place. So it's really cool. A lot of comedians from all around the country. And yeah, check that out. I'm also on the One Night Only tour, Variety Tour, with Mark Hayward, Jonathan Burns, and other Variety performers, yo-yos, mentalists, all that. Not like the mentalist, the show, but I'm the stand-up comedian on the show, and I'm a little mental. So check that out. I'm going to be all over the place. Baltimore, outside of Philly, Friday the 15th, I'm in Delaware doing an awesome fundraiser, and then the 16th I'll be in Phoenixville, PA, with the One Night Only tour. And yes, I am going back to Pittsburgh for the Midnight Comic Wars, part of the Burning Bridges Festival. The Burning Bridges Festival at Arcade Comedy Theater. So yeah, check that out. I'm also going to be in Lansing, Michigan at the end of the month, the 28th through the 30th at Trippers Comedy Club headlining. A lot of good stuff coming up. You're the best. John Dick Winters is one of the best. So here we go. My friend John Dick Winters.
What's up, Epicast? This is John Dick Winters. I'm here talking to you about the Burning Bridges Comedy Festival.
Burning Bridges Comedy Festival.
Coming to Pittsburgh April 15th and 16th, all over Allentown, Southside, and Downtown. We're doing 14 shows and 6 venues in 2 days. I have 20 nationally touring comedians coming into town, along with 30 local comedians making you laugh all weekend. Jeff Tate is headlining Club Cafe and Work Hard Pittsburgh.
Jeff Tate.
We're selling festival passes for $20 at burningbridgesfestival.com. We are only selling 100 of these, and they will sell out, so get one now.
Get one now.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Kleiber. I have a really fun guest. I just called you fun, which I apologize for that. I don't know how funny he is. You can be fun. But my guest this week is John Dick Winters. You have to say his full name, John Dick Winters.
Yep.
I know him from the Pittsburgh comedy scene. He's had a pretty big resurgence of comedy. You've had to do a lot with the resurgence of comedy. You did in Pittsburgh. You did.
Well, I don't see it that way because it was kind of resurging as I started.
Yeah, but you, I think you did something where I've told people that you've done a good job of kind of injecting a little like punk into the comedy scene, which is just like what I mean, but just like.
Which is just like, which is basically heroin.
You provided heroin for everybody, and we all thank you because now the people that don't do heroin have more shows. No, I mean, just really, just the way rock bands and punk bands put on shows, and you have done that well. You've done a good job, and that
thank you.
That kind of started with Race to the Coffin comedy tour. You guys have toured the country and did that. Mm-hmm. Which started with a show that I put together.
Yeah, you were the impetus for Race to the Coffin. For sure, I've always given you credit for
the,
that.
What was that called?
I just Nothing Sacred.
Nothing Sacred comedy show.
I have that poster framed on my wall.
And Mike Rabino from Arcade made that poster.
Because, oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I told him, I was like, you know, they're all kind of like wild comics, you know, they say crazy things, you know, and then. And it's like, you know, there's nothing sacred, you know, because that's a term in comedy. Like,
yeah.
You know, nothing sacred for this comic. Like, he'll say whatever. And I was just like, you know, like, I was thinking like Stained Glass Angels or something. And Mike Rubino's the guy that's like, okay.
Yeah.
Done.
It's funny about that show. That was my first paid gig. That was in July of 2012.
Wow.
And I had,
believe that was that long ago.
Yeah. I had been doing comedy for 6 months. And I was put on the show with people who've been doing it for like a year longer than me or whatever.
Wow.
And I remember the deal that we got. We all got $30 plus a pretty good bar tab, which even today would be a great deal for what
I'm
doing.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, and I remember thinking like, oh, man, these guys, I mean, it's going to be a good show. I think from the beginning, and I'm not trying to like, you know, I'm not trying to act like I'm like being like a shepherd or something like that. I just wanted to put together a show where you guys could do a show together in like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the guys that are there talk about, well, the guys that talk about stuff that's, that have nothing sacred, like
yeah.
Just talk about whatever they want. It's like, oh, let's create a show that these guys can do together and people can have fun in the right
venue. Still,
it's
still funny to me to think that Tim Ross was only on that show because he looked like us, because he does not, he's completely vanilla.
Well, I think I started to be really close friends with him then. And yeah, I don't know what happened with that.
He just looked like us. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, you have a
totally,
beard.
Totally worked out.
You have a
fine.
Beard. Get in here. And Robert X now is doing comedy in Philadelphia. And who else is on? Alex Stapula, Tim Ross, you, Shannon Norman.
Yep, that's it.
Did I host it?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, Nothing Sacred turned into Race to the Coffin, and you guys added Jesse Irvin.
Yeah, because Robert X moved, and Jesse and I knew each other a long time ago. Our bands used to play together like 10, 15 years ago.
That's so funny when you guys talk about bands,
yeah.
Like how you play in these bands.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some pretty hilarious YouTube videos of you playing in bands.
I do.
Like hilarious.
Yeah, where I had dreadlocks.
That's the best. And now it's pretty exciting in Pittsburgh that you're pretty much made the second, maybe third comedy festival in Pittsburgh. There's the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival, which is mostly an improv festival.
Yeah, there's a DVE Fest. Yeah.
Then there's DVE Comedy Festival. But Burning Bridges Comedy Festival is like, you did what you've always done. You put together kind of like a punk stand-up, you know. And that what I mean is, I don't know why to keep saying that, but it's the only way to describe it.
Well, you keep saying,
I hate saying alt.
No, you keep saying punk, which you're not wrong. I always just use DIY.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Just the do-it-yourself mentality, which is obviously associated with the punk scene for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and, kind of the street team.
And given my aesthetic, you're not wrong in saying that, but I always say DIY.
I'll post a picture of you so people understand who I'm talking
yeah,
to.
Absolutely.
And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, we get it. We get what kind of festivals he does.
Yeah, you know what? The Burning Bridges didn't start out that way. I've always wanted to do my own fest, and when Pittsburgh Comedy Festival started 2 years ago, I was like, well, I just won't do it then. They're doing it already. But they're doing it in such a, like, a rigid kind of structured way.
Yeah, it's
which
a
is it's a whole different way than I would personally do. Obviously, sure. Different than the way that I would do a festival. And so I was like, after I experienced what they were doing, I'm like, oh, I think I can still do my own thing. And
sure,
there's
yeah.
plenty of room for both of us. That was my mentality.
Absolutely.
When I decided to go ahead at the end of last year to book this festival, and
right.
then it was just basically an excuse to bring in some friends from around the country to tell jokes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's 14 shows in 2 days at six venues with over 50 comedians. I didn't mean for that to happen. It just kind of evolved that way. Because the support I got was kind of overwhelming, and it just became sure. like, I just kept like, oh, we can do this. Oh, we can do this too.
Right.
And then this is what it came up to.
No, I think it's really exciting. I mean, I'm willing to do anything for it, you know, and doing a Comic Wars for it. That's mm-hmm. going to be a lot of fun to do a midnight Comic Wars, especially with road comics.
Yeah.
I do a stand-up comedy game show called Comic Wars, if I haven't mentioned it before. But it's pretty much has residency at Arcade. And I love doing that with road comics who don't know each other.
Yeah.
And we've proven, because we've done it already, that it works.
Absolutely.
And it's a lot of fun.
I did an interview with the City Paper today, and I mentioned how I think Comic Wars is the most exciting comedy show in the city.
Well, you're the sweetest.
I do. I think it's great.
I think it's so fun. It's some of the most fun I have on stage.
Yeah.
And it's because I get to do something different.
Yeah.
Like I'm not hosting.
I mean, that's the whole point of most of the shows that I produce. Like that's the whole point of
right.
Comedy Roulette, is that it's just not a monotonous comedy
right.
show. It has this marketable quality that's just like this one little extra thing, and it makes it so much more fun and challenging in a lot of ways, because it's just not your normal set or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely just I come from a background where I worked in camps and nonprofit and pretty much ran games like that for kids, like stage games with like, you know, props and
yeah,
eyes.
Brainwashing, yeah.
No, not at all. But like I love doing that kind of stuff, and so I'm used to doing that. And then it's just being on stage with my friends and adults in the audience. It's like, okay, now you can just I pretty much improvise a game show for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I just know an order and improvise my way from 1 to 9.
Absolutely.
And it's a blast. So thanks, man. It is fun. And I want to do it in different cities. I would like to try that. And you have a couple other shows during Burning Bridges, like fun. Talk about some of the other fun shows you do during Burning Bridges, but some of the ones that you've done before. Like,
yeah. So Burning Bridges is featuring, there's a Comic Wars show, then we're doing a Nearly Nude show, which is just my version of underwear show,
yeah.
Which was made famous by Joe Pettis out of Atlanta.
Is Pettis coming up for this?
He couldn't make it. Now, I was going to do an underwear show regardless, but if he would have been here, he would have hosted it. But
right,
no,
right.
He couldn't make it. He was booked in a different city.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We're doing an all cop show,
which is that is such a good idea. Because
well, it's a good idea. We'll see how it works out.
I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I think it will be too.
My podcast producer, Epicast, Nick Miller, owns Black Forge Coffee.
Yeah.
And it's next to a police station.
Yeah.
On Warrington Avenue.
Yep.
And that's a great idea. Or isn't it like 3 p.m.?
It's at 1 in the afternoon.
That's
and
great.
The station commander is catering the event. So the cops will come over and eat their lunch and listen to a comedy show. And, you know, you've been to Black Forge, and we all hang out at Black Forge for shows and stuff. And they're just nice guys. Now, I'm not some like super anti-cop guy. I'm also not some super pro-cop guy, but I think for the most part, they're just people.
Sure.
And I'm sure they would like to laugh like any other group of people. So when we started planning the fest, and one of my first ideas was, let's do a show for all cops and see how that goes. And they loved the idea. Like the guy, the police commander, the precinct commander, whatever his name, I'm blanking on his name, I apologize. But he's like inviting cops from all over the city, not just that particular precinct.
Oh, man. So maybe next year when you do it, you just do an all-cop show at a bigger venue.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the thing is, obviously most of them are on duty, so they can't stay for very long.
Right.
So there's going to be a transient audience. But I'm excited to see just the uniqueness of it. It will be fun, and I'm hopefully it won't get out of hand or anything like that, which I don't think it will.
I think it'll all be in fun, and when it comes down to it, they're just people.
Yeah. That's why I see it, too. So Beyond the Cop Show, the one I'm really excited about is the worst tattoo competition.
That is so funny. And how are you not giving Shannon Norman a trophy already?
I don't think you got to see some of the guys coming in to do the show.
Oh, yeah, some of the out-of-town comics.
Oh, yeah. That's the reason why this show is happening on the festival, and I haven't done it in Pittsburgh because there's just not enough comedians in Pittsburgh who would do it. So the premise is that a group of comedians, I think there's 8 or 9 on the show, and at the top of the show, they go up and they show what they consider to be their worst tattoo.
Yeah.
They maybe tell a quick story about it, and then there's judges who will vote on it. And whoever gets the worst tattoo voted is going to get a tattoo on stage during the show, but they are not going to know what the tattoo is. they're just going to be...
Are you shitting me?
Yeah, they won't even know until it's done.
Who's voting what goes on them?
That is a great question. I think we might just like have a couple of different tattoos we pull out of a hat or something
and
like
have
that.
Have the audience pick?
Yeah, kind of like that. Like, yeah.
Take them in the other... like.
Yeah.
It's like an improv game where you take them in the other room.
Something like that.
And the audience picks. And that's a great idea.
I have Ryan Westfall, who's the owner of Butler Street Tattoo, who is a big comedy fan and comes to a lot of the shows. He's going to be on the stage with a microphone. Both the comedian and the tattoo artist will have a mic.
Oh, my God.
And the tattoo will be going on during the stage. And then a show will go on also. And so hopefully there'll be interaction between the comic getting tattooed and the comedians.
Where were you doing that?
That's at the Murder Room. That's at the Commonwealth Press's warehouse.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which Commonwealth Press is a local screen printer, and they're one of the bigger sponsors of the festival. And then they also have a little punk venue on the side of their warehouse, which they've had a lot of punk shows, but they've never had comedy there before. But this one fits in, I think.
That's such a fun idea. And you do other shows, like you do the bingo show.
Yeah, I do. I do a
comedy. Called That's Bingo?
That's a Bingo.
That's a Bingo.
That's from Inglourious Basterds. The logo for the show is a Nazi general or whatever that guy, whatever that character was. Yeah. I don't think people are getting the joke, but whatever.
You know?
Yeah, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and That's a Bingo. So it's a stand-up comedy bingo, which is basically bingo with words, which is a show that happens in a lot of places throughout the country. Yeah. And I just wanted to do one here. We need a strong Sunday show, and I'm hoping that this will develop into it.
Yeah, I was going to do it this week.
But someone wants to go get paid. It's like a sellout.
I know. Well, even when I'm home, I'm like, I'll do whatever. I just want to get on stage, hang out with people, but and I'll get to it one day.
Absolutely.
I've always said, I think you've done a lot of cool stuff for the Pittsburgh scene and kind of like just keep people like churning to like, churning in the like excitement of comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a lot of fun. And now you're doing a midnight show at Arcade.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing technically Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. We put a show together and technically Sunday, which is going to be technically Saturday for Burning Bridges.
Yeah. Well, they're doing technically Sunday too. That's Comic Wars. We'll just use the name for both.
And okay. I moved that because I'm going to make money. I apologize. No, that's a nonprofit for a disease, and I misplaced it on my calendar because I'm a dick. That's what happened. But and you also, last year at the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival, we had an amateur competition. You won that and got a spot in the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival. And did you win a competition at the Improv?
I placed, and I got third.
Yeah, you got third.
Yep.
So you're all right. It's like, people
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, the people that don't listen, they're like, who's this guy? Like, he's all right, okay? Yeah. He's done some good stuff. He's doing good.
I played a living room in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Killed.
You played a living room in Eau Claire?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I did a casino there.
Yeah, there's a nice little independent comedy scene in Eau Claire. There's like 8 people do comedy, and they're all awesome. Like, Kyle Kinane was there a few weeks ago in Eau Claire.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, I know they book a couple things there. There's a lot of comedy in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Like a lot.
Yep.
And some really good clubs.
Yep.
Minneapolis, Appleton. There's a lot of good clubs up there. But no, I wanted to have you on because you're also a dad. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times if people would see our sets, like we're like the polar opposite dads, I think people like try to pin us that way where like you're some... No, I mean, it's probably mostly appearance. Well, no, you're probably a little meaner than I am about about dad stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. I definitely have a mean streak as far as my general humor is concerned. Like off stage, definitely I have a mean streak. And with my kids, it's very like jovial and joking that way. That's how I was raised, just to be like mean to each other.
Well, I get it. Yeah. No, I think like it's just funny. I think that if there's like a dad standing here, a normal dad, that you and I would be on each side of his shoulder, like that.
Oh,
people
the angels.
Think that's but it's not very much like that. I mean, I can appreciate like what you do, and I know I do cheesy stuff and talk about how much my life is insane, but it's really just all jokes, But I think it's it's fitting that you're on Grown Dad Business because you have twin daughters.
I do.
And that is, I would never wish that upon anybody, but obviously people that do have twins, it's a good thing. And you enjoy it. I mean, yeah. you know, as much as, you know, we say like, we can't stand having kids and, you know, make people laugh about it. I still can't imagine having twins. That's bananas.
You know what? I think you did it harder. No, I mean, number one, you wanted kids. So there's the big difference between me and you. But
that's true.
You have three kids and you have a baby at home.
Yeah.
You're almost a toddler now, right?
7, 5, and 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's way more difficult than having twins. Twins is, they just grow up together. And by the time they're 2 or 3, they just always have someone to play with. And it's just,
you're right.
The first couple of months is difficult because you're dealing with two babies.
Right.
But like after that, it's...
They're just playing together the whole time.
And, you know, and then they always have someone to be there with them. And it might not be a twin thing, but my daughters specifically are just like a little bit more... they're pretty mature and they've always been really well behaved. So...
Well, I could see you as... And I've met your ex-wife before.
Yeah.
You seem like the kind of people that like would raise your kids a little more mature. I mean, because I'm like that too. My wife and I are like, we don't like baby them and put like baby leashes on them and, you know, and talk to them like they're people.
I remember refusing to use walkers or strollers with them by the time they're like 18 months.
Like, oh, yeah. Like we, three and four year olds.
Yeah, they walk.
Yeah, like they're in a stroller. Yeah, I'm like, get the fuck, what?
That's upsetting.
Like that kid's 4.
Yeah.
What the hell
you're ruining society 20 years from now. That's what you're doing.
or people that are just like, you ever see the moms that like, their 6-year-old once picked up and they pick him up and this mom, this 120-pound mom has like this grown man, this like 6-year-old boy on his hip and I'm like, get his ass, what the, get, if my son was like, carry me, I'm like, you're crazy.
It's like that eight-year-old inbred kid from Game of Thrones is still breastfeeds.
I know what you're talking about. I don't even watch Game of Thrones and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We have a comedian friend that talks about how his 3-year-old is still breastfeeding, which is
cuckoo. Do we?
We do.
Oh, wait. Okay. I think I know what it is.
And that's cuckoo bananas.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, dude. Three?
That's a little old, for sure.
How long did your girls breastfeed?
Not very long, because my ex-wife, unfortunately, couldn't do it.
Yeah.
She would have went as long as possible. But yeah, it was only a few months.
Oh, no, my wife was like, nope, I want my boobs back.
Yeah.
Like, I think we did 4 months.
Yeah.
No, every kid, it got less and less. It was like 6 months, 5 months, and the third baby, it was like a week, get off me. Like, I'm done. But, like, so how, were you married when you had kids?
No, we got married almost when the girls were 1 year old. We got married, and the marriage lasted for almost 5 years, or about 5 years. We've been separated. We're still not divorced.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've been separated since 08, so it's been 8 years.
You just haven't got a divorce?
You know, this is a funny story.
That still work out tax purpose-wise?
She just claims everything. I just give her all the...
Yeah.
She gets all
I'm
the money.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. It's funny that came up because my ex-wife and I are tight, and she owns a restaurant, and I went to help her this weekend to cook, and I was sitting there... And I said to her, I'm like, hey, what were those papers I signed a few months ago? Do I not own the house anymore? Because we also own a house together. It's like, did I sign over the house to you? What were those papers? She's like, oh, those were divorce papers. I'm like, are we divorced? She's like, we will be soon. I'm like, oh, good to know. I had no idea what I signed. She just told me to sign papers. And I was like, okay. And apparently she is getting a divorce, but like it's been slow. It's just expensive. It's really expensive to get divorced.
Is it?
Yeah. When you have kids and property, yeah, it's really expensive.
But why can't you just be like, no, we're cool?
Well, I mean, that's what we've done. I mean, not on paper, but as far as the divorce, like, they're just, I mean, it takes a lot of money to file for divorce.
Really?
Yeah, it takes like $300 just to file for the divorce, and then there's more beyond that. That's the main reason why we never did it. But then we're also, it doesn't really affect our lives to not be divorced.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless one of you guys want to get married again or something.
I mean, from my end, that's never, never going to happen.
No, I see you in your black vest living the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're doing. Having a good time. I get it. Cruising. I know what you mean. So, I mean, obviously you didn't plan to have twins.
No. No, she got pregnant in like November of 2002, and then by March of 2003, which is like when I turned 20 years old.
Oh, two.
Yeah.
I was a sophomore in college.
Yeah, I was 19.
You were 19.
Yeah.
What were you doing at 19?
I was living in the South Side.
And were you? What were you doing?
I was going to the Art Institute, which didn't last for that long. I didn't like it very much, but then I was just living here, and then all of a sudden I was a father.
Were you like in a band? Were you like?
I was just hanging. I was riding BMX a lot. I rode BMX. I kind of moved to Pittsburgh to go to school, but mostly because of the BMX scene.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That is, I love learning stuff about people that I've known for a while by doing this podcast.
Yeah, I used to spend like 40 hours a week riding my bike.
Me and my brothers used to do that a lot. Yeah. Dirt jumps, stuff like that, race each other. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of like, now I don't know about it anymore because I'm so far removed, but back then in the early 2000s,
I remember.
There was a big, huge pro scene.
Yeah, yeah. We went to a couple of those, me and my brothers, and we would go out to South Park, and South Park would have a bunch of like BMX trails, or North Park had one too.
Yep.
But there was a lot of, there was actually a really cool one in Munhall in Steel Valley.
Yep.
Like behind a church.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody built it.
Yep.
And it went all the way through the woods with jumps, and it was like amazing. But that's, so you were doing BMX and you were like, oh, I got my girlfriend pregnant.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't my girlfriend, but yeah.
Oh my God. do you feel like you guys kind of did the right thing? You're like, oh, you're pregnant. Let's like stay together.
This is the funny thing about our story is that her parents are evangelical Christians. And so when she got pregnant,
that's a blast.
Yeah. So when she got pregnant,
was she 19?
She was 21.
Okay.
So there was pressure from them to get married. And I remember this is 19 years old. I sat down on their couch and to their faces was like, listen, I don't love your daughter. I'm not going to marry her. 19 years old, I was saying this to two grown people.
19-year-old John Dick Winter saying that, I 100% believe it.
Yeah, and they didn't care. They just wanted us to get married. And then a year later I think I was in love. I was in love, or I thought I was in love. I'm not sure if there's a difference. And when I proposed or whatever, and we decided to get married, they were against it because by that time they had found out that I was a very devout atheist, and that I have a very different view on what life should be. Like they didn't dislike me, but they weren't stoked that I'd be part of the family.
So they're
at all.
Like, we'll be okay without you.
Yeah, they did not like the idea of us getting married. But then we went through with it anyway, and they came around too. There was a couple of years there where I was pretty tight with my ex-wife's family, and we were all trying to make it work. And I used to live in the suburbs. And I thought I was going to go into their family business.
What's their family business?
They used to sell Subway franchises.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's people, obviously, Subways are a franchise, but then the people who sell the Subways in the region, that's also a franchise.
Sure.
So like, they would sell people's stores and they would maintain them, that they were in charge of that, and then they would get a percentage of every Subway sales in
maintain the brand and like make sure that
that's
was
what they
all
did. They've been working in Subway for like 35 years at that point, and they got out like maybe 5 years ago.
Holy crap.
It was.
So they're probably doing all right.
Yeah, they're fine.
Huh. Wow. And then you were married for about 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And that was cool for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did you... it's so funny. I feel like you've... I don't want to try to rip on you on the podcast, but like it's funny that you've had like multiple alt identities. Like you're like I'm a BMX rider, then you're in punk bands, now you're a comic.
Well, yeah, you're not
anything that accepted tattoos. You were there,
cook, chef.
You were a chef. I was just gonna say you're a chef.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. That's one way to look at it. I definitely tried a lot of different things. I failed at a lot of different things. I played poker professionally for a year.
Shut your mouth.
Before the casino, there was a big underground poker scene in Pittsburgh. Like,
did that lead to your divorce?
No, not at all. But I used to pay a mortgage with poker.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah. but I then eventually lost it all and had to go back to get a real job. I was a stay-at-home dad for a while. I owned an ice cream truck. Like one of those ice cream trucks. You know what I mean?
We're the same age, right? How old are you?
33. I just turned 34. Yeah.
Yeah, I like because I have a similar stories. Like I have done.
I tried and
jobs.
Failed at a lot of things because my ultimate goal was to always just not have a boss, not to have a you know, that's and not necessarily like own my own business, but just whatever to not have to answer to anybody. And then I've always loved comedy, and I was always just like I didn't start doing comedy until I was almost 29, and the reason why it took me so long to get into it was because I grew up idolizing George Carlin.
Right.
And when you grow up idolizing George Carlin, it got into my brain being like, oh, I can never do that.
Sure.
Because you can't.
Oh, I absolutely. I mean, I grew up loving Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. So and I'm like, well, I can't because I'm white.
Up, yeah,
I
you definitely grow up can't do idolizing that. These people who are in another stratosphere,
sure,
even in their own world. And then you're just like, I can't do that.
Right.
And it kind of took me a long time to realize, like, maybe I could find my – Louis C.K. was kind of the catalyst because he started doing jokes when I was a father. And I was like, oh, I've lived every one of these experiences. Sure. And it was a little really frustrating to see him – up on stage telling basically my life story, but like doing it obviously so well. And him doing that kind of material is like, oh, maybe I could do this. Because he brings such an everyman quality to it that George Carlin does not have. George Carlin's so eloquent and so verbose in his language.
Oh, right. He feels like he's like in front of like I don't know, some like Greek like troubadour.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's a very well rehearsed, refined performance.
It's more of like
what Louis C.K.
satirical speech.
Yeah, that, and that's not what Louis, that's not a lot of people. No one really does that. Very few people really do that. And so I didn't really.
I read something calling him like a modern day philosopher.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about that. He definitely crossed the line between comedian to orator to satire to philosophy. Yeah, for sure. And, but when I mean, I've always been a fan of comedy, but then obviously Louis C.K., like a lot of comedians, spoke to me directly. And I was like, oh, well, then you can just be a regular slob and still have intelligent things to say, but not say them with such, you don't have to have a thesaurus next to you to write a comedy set.
Sure, I know, right?
Yeah, so that kind of changed my thinking. And then I finally got the balls to do an open mic.
But you came, is that directly coming from doing like being in bands?
No, there's a huge gap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like 8 years.
How long did you do? Were you in bands?
Just a few years.
Really?
Yeah, not
just kind of tried it out.
Well, my friends already had an established band, and there was some change inside the band that I got invited into the band. So I never started in a band like from the ground up. I never did that. It was already a pretty well established band in Altoona, and I was already living in Pittsburgh. But we did that. I did that for like 2 or 3 years. Recorded an album with them. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I mean, you already you got a little taste of the stage.
Yeah, stuff, very little. Yeah.
A little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always interested in, you know, how that worked. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just did comedy. You just were like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to do it. I actually did one open mic, maybe 5 years before I actually started. One at the Improv. That one of those Wednesday night things that are just terrible.
That had to have been back in the day.
It was like 05, 06.
Oh, geez. Billy Elmer might have been hosting that then.
He might definitely might have been. I cannot remember for the life of me who it was. But
yeah,
it was,
Billy
it was,
Elmer, from what I've heard, this is just, you know, knowing the history of Pittsburgh comedy, he hosted the open mic there like from the day it opened to for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And then they didn't hire him.
I've actually never met Billy Elmer, so I'm not sure if it was him or not. I don't know if I'd know him to see him. And it obviously doesn't matter. But like, it was such a traumatizing experience. That it scared me off. I was like, oh, I'm never doing that
especially,
again.
Especially, I always think like the people that want to do comedy, they do it at the comedy club, the A comedy club first.
Well, because you don't know any other way. And this is, this is 06.
You're absolutely right. They just
It doesn't make sense because you can Google and every open mic in the city will come up. But back then, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Right. You're just like, I'm going to go to the comedy club.
Yeah.
And even still then, I'd say 2005, 2006, I think Billy Crawford was doing like an open mic somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like in. Whatchamacallit, like Regent Square, something like that. He was doing something over there.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He had like one of the only open mics.
Okay.
I think Kren had one for a minute too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, there was nothing going on.
Yeah.
Because when I started in 09, there was nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, 09. I mean, there was the Moose. That's it.
Yeah.
That was Mitch McCulsha.
Yeah.
That's it. And then the Funny But Open Mic and the Improv Open Mic. And then how long have you been doing it now? You've been doing it?
Not quite 4.5 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're doing all right.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I'm okay with my trajectory.
Yeah, it's funny. And I mean this as a compliment. Like, I don't remember comedy without you. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, that's a good. Because I'm like, wow, there was like probably 2 years, my first 2 years where you weren't around. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, you don't know, like really know Mitch McCulsha or Danny Palumbo and.
Not, I only know Danny from him visiting.
Right.
I don't think I've ever worked with Danny outside of like a mic or maybe a show here.
Yeah.
Pleasure Bar recording.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was that crew, you know, John Pridmore and Mitch McCulsha and Minto was around.
Yeah, I'm part of the class. I'm a little bit newer than like my contemporaries are Reza Wadney, Alex Lapiola,
wow,
Tim Ross, and Shannon Norman. And like, I'm part of, they're a little, been doing it longer than me a little bit, but I consider myself part of kind of that class.
Right, right.
And then the people that are younger than me, you got people like, you know, the Brandon Shells and Ryan Garrison and Harry Gilliland and a few other people that I'm just like, it's cool to be. And then there's people like you who are even like, there's these, I don't want to say hierarchies,
no,
but there's
I mean, there is, though. There is.
Yeah, but that sounds like that's like it's like a status kind of thing. I think of it like a class situation where there's seniors and there's juniors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And where if I'm a sophomore and then those guys are freshmen and you're a junior and Bill Crawford is the seniors or whatever.
Yeah, it's I still look up to Bill Crawford like he would be like the college guy.
Absolutely,
know,
yeah. You know? And I like seeing that progression. I like being, you know, I just remember when I started, like, you were doing it for about as long as I am now when I started, give or take, you know, you and Minto and stuff. And that's cool to be, like, at that point now and being – I don't want to say I'm looked up to by people, but I know people look to me for advice and
– Sure.
And for
– Yeah, people know that you put in the years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? It's cool. It's a cool thing to be a part of. And, you know, some people bitch about – the comedy scene being like this cliquish kind of thing. And you know what? I don't know. Maybe it's the straight white male in me, but I don't see it that way. I never have.
I always think that it comes from, and, you know, I've had conversations about this. This is very, I don't know if people want to talk about parenting and grown dad stuff, but usually it's a lot of comedians that listen. But it's a little inside baseball. But I attribute to, here's the thing. When people are like, oh, you know, Aaron or John or whatever, they're putting these guys on shows and they're hanging out with them all the time. I hang out with good people, and normally those people are good comics.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hang around – I hang around people that I can relate to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, you're just really good friends with Shannon. And I'm like, he's a good comic.
Yeah.
I just gravitate towards people that I have things in common with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you just started comedy 6 months ago, we don't have a lot in common. You know, now if you like the Beastie Boys and hockey, sure, let's talk, you know. But, like, you know what I mean? And I think people see that as, like, oh, they have their favorites. No, we came up together.
Well, number one, people say they have their favorites as if there's something wrong with having your favorites.
Right.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with having the guys that your go-to people.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be one of those people, but it's not. But you have to kind of earn it. Weird about, like, putting in the time or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of thing. And maybe it's because I come from this weird background, like, where I spent so many years in kitchens where I've walked into new kitchens, and no matter how good of a cook you are, you have to just kind of, like, start at the bottom, or you have to kind of put in your whatever weeks or months or years. And so I've been through that process a bunch. So when I started doing comedy, I wasn't intimidated by that. I wanted to be one of those guys,
sure,
for sure. But I wasn't bitching that much. Or I'm sure I never, and I'm not saying I never bitched about anything, but, like, I understood that you have to, like, put in your time and with any situation. It doesn't matter what it is. And if you are one of those people making excuses about it being cliquish, then I think maybe it's you.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I've always said, too, now it's kind of like a mantra I say that, like, I've broken down all of my comedy advice to just be kind and be funny.
You know what? I repeat that so much now because I've been such an asshole for so long, and I've tried to. I've tried. It's just part of my natural personality. It's not malicious, but I've tried to, like, overtake that, because you were on that comedy panel last year for the comedy festival, and it really, a lot of the advice that was said to you and the improvisers and Todd Glass, I went there for a reason, to learn something. Yeah. I feel like I really did, and it was very helpful. Cool.
Well, no, and I say that because I think that it's very true.
It is.
Like, when people are like, oh, well, I mean, I just want to get on the improv and blah, blah. I'm like, well, just be a cool dude and be funny.
Yeah, and that's, like, that's,
I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. Or people try to be like, why? Well, I have connections with this, and I'm trying to, you know, we know comedians that have tried to weasel in and kiss ass. And I'm just like, that's cool. Like, you can be friends with everybody. But unless you, it comes down to, you got to get on that mic.
Being humble and being funny and being okay to be around is going to work a lot better in the long run.
Yes.
And I, you know,
I feel like you figure that out at one point.
You have to.
But, like, I think I've consciously told you, or I think I've told you that I, like, saw you consciously make a change.
Yeah. I did consciously make a change.
You did.
Yeah.
Because you were an asshole.
Yeah.
And not like, you know, I never had, like, I was like, man, John is fucking, he's always fucking miserable. And, like, you know, it's like, geez, dude. And, like, you were kind of mean to people. And, And I was just like, well, I remember just thinking like, man, that's not going to work very long.
Well, here's the thing with that. And it took me a long time to learn this lesson that that's part of my sense of humor. Like I said, I grew up just kind of like ripping on my dad, my brother ripping on me. So
I've told people that. I was like, well, you got to get to know John.
Yeah.
But
then I also learned a lesson, and this was very difficult for me. It took a few years that like there's a part of me that when I was like talking with specifically comedians, like I wanted to prove myself out on the sidewalk or whatever it is to be one of those guys. And you know what? Now that I've kind of, I mean, not that I don't have long ways to go, but like now that I've proven myself on stage a little bit, like I don't feel that need to prove myself among my peers. It's kind of an immature thing that I was doing for a long time where I was like, I have to be mean. I have to riff on people. I have to do this thing. And like that's kind of not the case anymore.
And everybody kind of goes through that, I think, because starting stand-up comedy, you kind of go through the whole, you know, I'm the new kid at the lunch table thing.
Yeah, plus I was an asshole to begin with, so it didn't help.
it was a fiery mixture.
Yeah, but I
definitely – I've given you credit behind your back to say that like –
How dare you?
Yeah. I've complimented you behind your back, so deal with that.
Yeah.
That I definitely feel like you've made a conscious effort, and it was cool to see you just kind of be like, you know what? I'm going to start being cool to people. Like it just – That's the only way I can describe it. Like,
well, it's just, you know, it may have taken me 30 some years to learn, but that treat people the way you want to be treated thing,
absolutely,
is
man.
Very, very helpful. And like, and a part of me used to reverse that because I like being made fun of. I think it's one of my favorite things in the world. And so that was my attitude for a long time. Like, well, I like being treated that way, so I treat other people like that. But people don't like being treated.
Well, then
that
and
way.
Then you realize that everybody's different.
Yeah, that's the ingredient that I was missing for a long time. So now it's more of like a switch that I can turn on and off when it's appropriate.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time that that's what it is, man. Be kind and be funny, and that's all you can really do.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's. You were saying like that's kind of where you came from.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You kind of came from. Did you come from what kind of home did you come from?
Pretty normal middle class home, lower middle class probably, and it's just.
Where did you grow up?
In Altoona.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but my dad and my dad and I's relationship was just always roughhousing and always verbally abusive but jovial, like in a good way. And then my brother, like even to this day, like I have a hard time talking in front of my brother because he makes fun of me so bad.
is he an older brother?
Yeah, he's 40. He's like 10 years older than me or whatever.
10 years older?
Yeah.
No wonder why you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And all of his friends too. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're like the 8-year-old with a bunch of teenagers like, look at this little homo.
Absolutely.
Oh jeez.
That's precisely what it was.
No wonder.
Yeah.
Oh, I love discovering these things.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you call it a defense mechanism, but it actually turned into something I really enjoy doing. So, and also, and I'm not trying to, like, take blame off myself, but then you couple it with how I look and how big I am, and people get really intimidated when I start talking shit on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I know what you mean.
I feel like if I was 5'8", people would take it a lot better. But I'm 6'3 and 300 pounds, so people are like, that guy's really mean.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's definitely a factor. Plus, I just never turned it off for like 2-3 years. And when I started comedy, I just never turned it off.
So that, and you just have a brother?
No, I'm the youngest of four.
Whoa.
Yeah, I have sisters.
Dude, this makes so much sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what are your other siblings?
Well, my oldest brother and sister are the same age because they're not, those two actually aren't related. They're my half brother
and
sister.
Okay, gotcha.
So different sides of the family. And then my middle sister is 5 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were always the little kid.
Always, yep.
So you were always defending yourself, always trying to like be like, I can hang with you guys.
I was always defending myself, but you know how it is, like when you have the youngest kid, your parents have learned a lot and they've really relaxed. So like I was hyper independent. Like by the time I was 8 years old, I was pretty much on my own as far as like summer. Like there was no babysitter.
Right.
8 years old in the summer. Right. I was just around all the time in the neighborhood. So yeah, I grew up pretty independent. And then with way more lax roles, and then with fending with teenagers all the time.
Right. And so your parents were pretty normal.
Yeah.
What did your parents do?
My dad managed like a security company for a long time. Then he was an insurance salesman. And my mom, until the other week, worked 43 years in the same restaurant.
Holy shit. Was she a server?
Yeah.
Waitress wow.
at a hot dog diner, which was on a Rick Seeback special.
What's it called?
Texas Hot Dog Shop in Altoona. It's amazing. It'll be 100 years old, the restaurant, in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of cool that your mom is one of those cool older ladies at a diner.
Yeah, I mean, she raised,
but do you know what I mean?
Four kids on, you know.
But what I mean is like when you go to those cool like diners,
absolutely. Yeah.
There's always like a 50-60-year-old mm-hmm. like waitress that's been there for 30 years, and you're like, man, she's so cool.
Yeah,
like I want to have a beer with her and a cigarette.
Yeah, that's my mom for sure. Except for the beer part, slow gin maybe.
So it was pretty normal.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I always feel like the people that become comedians either have tragedy mm-hmm. in their life. You know, I was abused as a kid and blah, 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 and lived in women's shelters and wah, wah, right? And but then it's either that, like you went through abuse or some kind of tragedy,
yeah,
or it was a sibling thing.
Yeah.
That's, and...
And maybe, I mean, I'm never...
I think it is. I mean...
Yeah, maybe. And
you're the youngest of four? Yeah. I mean, that kind of...
I mean, it definitely shaped my humor, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, like, I like talking to people about them growing up on this podcast, because it kind of shows the building blocks of being funny.
Yeah.
And it always has to do with family. It always...
Yeah, it seems that way, yeah.
It always has something to do with family. And, you know, I went to school for, like, you know, I went, took psychology and counseling and all these things, and I always find it very fascinating because, I mean, I've dug into my own life, like, here's why I am the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating, like, comedians have these things. You know, it's like, yeah.
Like that, a checklist almost.
Yeah, yeah, it's like you did have this thing where you had a defense mechanism that was heightened because of being the youngest sibling. Mm-hmm. And then, like, your dad, you know, kind of busted balls, or, you know, your brothers did, you know, and things like that. And then it's also, like, knowing that you went through your 20s with all these different things, like mm-hmm. trying things out.
Yeah.
That's like that. It's almost like a formula of, it's like, man, you're going to do comedy sooner or later.
Yeah.
Because you like the adventure and things like that.
For sure. And the autonomy.
Yeah. And that's something that comes from, I think, being a youngest child, too, is that you were like, you know what? One day I'm going to be in charge of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be the little baby anymore. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'm just like expressing it out loud because it's always this same. Like, I keep testing it every podcast where I'm like, what? And I'm like, yep.
Yeah, theory, I guess you can prove it. I wish I was laying on a couch right now.
I know, I get that. But I don't want to try to do that. So now you're your own grown man.
Yeah.
With children.
Yeah.
And your twins are 12?
Yeah, they'll be 13 shortly. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And you have some really funny, go see John Dick Winters live, because you have some really funny jokes about your kids that I wouldn't tell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I give a lot of credit to guys like you and some other comics that are more ballsy. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm too, I don't want to say stuff like that. You know what I mean? Not that it's bad.
Yeah.
I just, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I think I don't have the balls.
Well, for a long time,
I don't want to take the chance of being disliked.
Yeah, I learned early on that some of the jokes I was doing, it could be very alienating, and I had to really pepper them in, mm-hmm. which was a great lesson on how to tell jokes like that.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole different way of doing things. But like, there was a long period of time where I just stopped doing jokes about my daughters because of the incessant comparisons to comedians that I didn't want to get anymore.
Sure.
Like, it's really difficult to be 18 months into comedy, and everyone's like, oh, you remind me of Louis C.K. I'm just like, that's not helpful to me at all. I don't want to be trying to be so derivative.
Yeah. I mean, people say dumb things too, where they're just like, you're just like Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? Because I'm a white dude.
Yeah,
with kids.
But that's even when like my comedian peers were saying it, like it's just like,
right.
I really, really shit away from it. And now I'm getting back into the daughter stuff,
right,
because I'm in this new phase where I have this different perspective on my own role as a father, which has
right.
been very different because their mother and I have been separated for so long.
Right.
And now they're coming into, I mean, they're so independent and so becoming so capable as human beings. Like, it's kind of cool.
Terrifying.
It's not, though. It's not terrifying at all. And I find it very encouraging. The terrifying part is having daughters and knowing the world that they live in.
Yes.
But as far as...
You're right.
That's the terrifying part. And I've actually tried to touch upon that in comedy, and it's not going very well.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm actually... It's cool because I'm not like you or like a normal dad, because I'm not there a ton. I see them when I see them.
Right.
But, like, I've never enjoyed being a father. Ever. I've never wanted to be a father, and I love my daughters and they love me, and I've been there for them. I live with them for 7 years of their, you know, all, more than half their life, but like nature took over.
Yeah.
And it was what happened was this. I had to either be a father and be miserable and ruin everyone's life, because that's what was happening. Or I could be a more distant person and go on with my life and make myself happy. And then they may not have the father, full-time father, but when they do have their father, he's a happy guy. That's the compromise that had to be made.
No, that's...
And my ex-wife is an angel because she 100% understands that and has never... been rude to me about it. I mean, not that there hasn't been tough times, but like she's been so supportive of what I'm doing. And if it wasn't for her support and my daughter's understanding, like I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do, I don't think.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It really does. Is that, and you know, I've always said too that like you can't love somebody else until you love yourself. You really can't.
Well, we're still ways from that, but.
we'll get what there. I mean, but
no, I know what you're saying.
You taking steps for you to be happier in your life will make you a better dad.
Yeah, and it's a struggle that I struggle with it because it is a selfish thing. But like, what's the point of being there if it's going to be horrible?
Right. That makes complete sense.
And people can call it a cop out, and you're not even necessarily wrong. But like, I know me. And I know what I know what I'm capable of doing to a group of people if I'm not in a good mood, and that's what was happening. So like, you know, I may only see my daughters once a week, or maybe not even that much, but like, it's more quality than quantity for sure.
Absolutely, no, I can totally relate to that in a weird way. Like, I know what you mean by, you know, where if I fly all day, I come home and my wife is not going to be like, hey, we're going to go grocery shopping all together. No, we're not. Daddy's going to take a nap and play Xbox for a half an hour.
Yeah.
And when I come up, we're going to be the happiest family in the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I need to like do something right now and like relax. So you get a better dad.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Well, good job on trying to be a better dad by being away more.
Yeah, it's definitely a mutually beneficial.
No,
I don't know if it's mutually beneficial.
It makes complete sense.
It has to be.
But dude, thanks for chatting, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And, Do you have a website?
RaceToTheCoffin.com, and I have BurningBridgesFestival.com.
BurningBridgesFestival.com, RaceToTheCoffin.com, right?
Yeah.
And go check out John Dick Winters. And you're on at John Dick Winters on Twitter, right?
On everything, yeah.
Yeah, you're on all that stuff. It's all at John Dick Winters.
It's all John Dick Winters, yeah.
Good for you. That's nice you got that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Aaron Cliver, but you know, that's no one else's. There actually is an old man, Aaron Cliver. I can't believe there's not any John Dick Winters.
I think there are. They're just not
on Twitter.
Super prominent.
They're in an old age home somewhere. I don't know. All right, dude. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.